Welcome to America's Commercial Real Estate Show, your source for market intel, forecasts, and strategies. Hello, I'm Michael Bull. Thank you for being with us. This segment is brought to you by CommercialAgentSuccess.com. Check it out for the ultimate and commercial broker training. Experienced brokers around the country and some around the world really rave about this. Check it out at CommercialAgentSuccess.com. Well, today we're going to talk about student housing. Now, student housing has seen a kind of a rise in interest from all types and size of investors around the country. But how is this kind of new economy and this changing economy impacting student housing? What should we expect moving forward? And where might there be some opportunities in the sector? It is kind of interesting to see that a lot of the investors are out there, equity and operating partners, kind of looking at different property types these days, right, to diversify their holdings. And student housing, certainly one of those with some interest from a lot of buyers in the marketplace. Please welcome my guest. It's Carl Whitaker. He's Director of Research and Analysis with RealPage. Carl, good to see you.
Good to see you too, Michael. It's been a while.
Yes, sir. So first of all, performance-wise, you know, how are student housing properties really performing now compared to how they've done in more recent years?
Yeah, the list of student housing accolades here over the past 6 to really 12 months has been pretty long, and it seems like it continues to grow. We've seen just about every key metric you can look at: pre-lease, current occupancy, year-over-year rent change. I mean, so many of those key metrics are, if not at an all-time high, then pretty close to it. So it's been a lot of strength in the sector here lately for some reasons that I'm sure you and I will get into through the discussion.
Yeah, so let's talk about break that down a little bit. So for rent increases, you know, what are you seeing now, and how's that compare to the past?
Yeah, year over year in our most recent set of data, which is going to reflect May 2023, year over year rent increases in student are about 9 to 9.5%, which is really interesting because kind of counter to what you're seeing on the conventional side, we're seeing rent acceleration among student housing. And I think a lot of that has to do with the late recovery nature of student housing relative to what happened with the conventional marketplace. You know, students were kind of kept at bay from campus for a little bit longer with remote learning. You know, even as schools started to open up, I don't know that you had the big influx of students coming back to campus, even if the enrollment numbers reflected that. But now you're actually seeing not only increasing enrollment for the first time in a few years, but you're seeing those students physically back in school, or back in class, I should say. And as a result, that's really strengthened rent growth, not to mention there just aren't a lot of available apartments for conventional multifamily housing near these campuses. So students are looking at the purpose-built segment with more earnest than maybe they were in years prior to the pandemic.
Why might there be an increase in students going to school right now?
I think a lot of it was that students that maybe took a gap year, you know, maybe they graduated in 2020 and said, hey, we'll take a year back. We'll, find a job, work a little bit, save up. I think you had that impact. And I think this is also another thing that gets lost in the national numbers when you're talking about student housing. But it's not that every campus is seeing an enrollment increase. We're seeing that the enrollment increases over the past year or two have really favored a specific type of campus. And that type of campus has been your big marquee brand name Power Five institution. So for some folks that maybe aren't as familiar with college football or college basketball, you can think of your Power Five schools as those big brand state flagship institutions, you know, the University of Georgia, University of Texas at Austin. Those are the schools where enrollment has really benefited over the past few years. Some of that being that universities eased admission requirements, you know, over the past year or two, not knowing where applications would be. Maybe a school would want to see 60% of applicants accepted. Maybe they lessened that to 70%, or eased that, I should say, to 70% of applicants accepted. And that's benefited a lot of those big brand name schools where students, you know, said, hey, maybe we should apply for the University of Kentucky. And I'm making the schools up for the sake of example here. Now, conversely, you look at your very off the beaten path campuses, the directional schools, you know, the smaller schools such as Division II institutions, that's where you're not seeing enrollment grow. And some of that could be a zero-sum game for what's happening with the Power Five institutions. So that's admittedly broad brush strokes there, but it kind of gives you a flavor of where the strength is versus where the strength isn't in the student sector today.
Yeah, well, that's interesting. So as you guys track performance for student housing properties around the country, do you see performance in certain markets that strong enough that might be a good space or a good spot for new supply?
Yeah, the new supply discussion is a really interesting one. You know, looking at, I'll start with a national comment here. Looking at national construction and student at the peak in 2014, 2015, about 60 to 70,000 new beds were delivering on an annual basis. Last year, you only had about 25,000 beds deliver. So, you know, 30% of your peak level. Today, the number is getting closer to 30 to 35,000 beds. So maybe kind of in between that COVID lull and the peak level. But what's interesting is that the shift of schools where that construction happens almost always changes over the course of a few years. You know, you may have 2 or 3 years where one campus gets a ton of new inventory. I'll pick on Texas A&M as a good example there, where 2015 to 2018, you know, thousands of new beds delivered. And it's been kind of quiet there since then as those new beds or as those beds were delivered. I think some campuses where development opportunities look strongest today, though, you know, I would point to some of those schools that are in major metropolitan areas that maybe were historically commuter style campuses that are now switching to more of a resident living there, going to school there without the commuting. You know, Florida International University, for example, in Miami or in the Miami metro, University of North Texas, where I went to school, historically commuter school, now changing to more of a more of a campus where residents live nearby. You know, and not necessarily those schools being good examples, but that type of school, I think, is one where development opportunities are still strong. And there's still opportunity at the big schools, you know, the University of Tennessee at Knoxville, University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, Wisconsin, Madison, et cetera. The challenge there is that whenever you start getting into the local political structure, the fabric of that neighborhood, sometimes even though the demand metrics would tell you this school has off the chart potential, there's a set of hurdles that you have to run through to even realize that supply delivering, and oftentimes it just doesn't happen. So student is really, really interesting in that regard, where if the NIMBYism is difficult in some of the conventional markets, you can multiply that tenfold within some of the student markets.
Well, that's interesting, and maybe, yeah, that's partly causing the buyer demand, right, for this asset class, a barrier of entry.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
and you mentioned the commuter schools that may be converting a little bit more to folks living around them. One of those is Georgia State here, where I'm headquartered in Atlanta. And we've just uncovered an opportunity where somebody could build really close to the campus some student housing. So I'm excited to get that on the market and see what happens. And, you know, when it comes to new supply, a lot of questions today around financing. You know, what are you seeing there related to financing for these types of properties?
Yeah, this is a really fun one to dive into. There's been a myth we've had to dispel over the past couple months now, that the myth that is being that regional banks make up a large share, north of 50% of financing for conventional housing. Real Capital Analytics and Jim Costello in particular put out some really great research a couple weeks ago that showed that the regional banks make up something like 20% of multifamily financing versus 40% in retail, 30% in office. So it's not to say that there aren't some apartment numbers that could shift with the regional bank turmoil that's happening right now, but multifamily is a lot more insulated, conventional multifamily that is, than other product sectors. The difference there, and this is key, is that student housing, I don't have the exact number, but student housing, construction financing in particular, a much larger share is provided via the regional banks. And some of that's just a simple matter of geographic makeup. You know, if you're trying to get a national bank looking at Auburn, Alabama, you know, this really off the beaten path metro area, you're probably going to want to go to a regional bank who knows that area a little bit more, a little bit more closely, maybe has some more connections in that area even. And because of that, I think you're going to see the challenges in securing, especially construction financing with via regional banks, is going to impact student housing construction more so than multifamily construction. So admittedly, a long-winded answer there, but I think that context is important because it's a very different story between conventional and student, as it often is.
Yeah. And how is pre-leasing going for next school year?
Pre-leasing has been off the charts strong. I mean, just about any month you look at this year has been at a record level. And as of the March set of data, today's pre-lease is 10 percentage points ahead of the previous record, which, by the way, was last year. So you can see where the momentum is really channeling into some of these student assets.
Yeah, that's great. And Carl, what would you see? Do you see a difference in cap rates between conventional apartments and student housing? What do you see there?
You do see a gap, you know, and it can differ campus to campus, region to region, et cetera. But generally speaking, 80 to 100 basis points, being that student housing is, you know, the cap rates are 80 to 100 basis points higher than conventional housing. That is, much like conventional housing, we have seen cap rates have bumped upwards over the past few months. And I think some of that's just a reflection of the broader economic climate at hand. Something that's been interesting, and you and I were talking about this as we were prepping for the show here, something that's been interesting here lately has been that while multifamily, conventional multifamily, that is, performance has moderated closer to historic norms, you've seen the valuations of those assets also drop. But with student housing, while the valuations have been dropping at a similar pace as multi, as conventional multi, that is, you've seen performance has been accelerating. So in other words, NOI with student has been growing faster than conventional, and that's actually helping offset some of that loss of valuation, and it shows up in the cap rates too.
That's interesting. And Carl, what do you expect the forecast-wise moving forward the next few years?
Yeah, the student forecast is always a really interesting one, and I'll be totally candid here. I think some folks in the industry would say that I've probably been one of the more bearish on the student housing outlook, you know, and we've kind of taken the approach of, you look at some of those high level demand metrics, 18 to 24 year old population, for example, it's not growing at the same pace it was 10 to 15 years ago. You've also got affordability challenges related to tuition. You know, how many students are looking at college saying, hey, it's no longer worth it for me to get a degree. And because of that, we actually have taken a little bit more of a conservative approach to the student housing performance forecast. That said, the past year or two, we've really seen some unforeseen circumstances shift maybe the outlook through 2025 and into 2026, that being that you've had the return of students to campus. You've also had some pent-up demand releasing as colleges have got back to normal. And on top of that, you've also seen international enrollment surpass its pre-pandemic level. And I think that surprised some of us how fast that international enrollment has snapped back. And because of that, you're seeing student housing is maybe in a position through 2025 and, like I said, early 2026 to be probably not at today's levels of performance, but ahead, I should say, of its pre-pandemic norm of roughly 2% rent growth, 93 to 95% occupancy. I think you're going to see performance remaining stronger than that for the next 2 or 3 years.
Oh, good. Well, a lot of student housing folks are doing the Snoopy dance, so that's a good thing, right? What about some recent mergers or acquisitions? Anything jump out at you there?
Yeah, the ACC, American Campus Communities, and Blackstone acquisition was huge news a couple years ago that took the last remaining publicly traded REIT within student housing off the public market and took them private under Blackstone. And it really points to a trend we're seeing in student that's a broad trend, and then one that I think we'll continue to see accelerate, and that's simply just consolidation. You're going to see some of the big student players continue to acquire some of the smaller players, especially as things like technology and centralization become more important. you're just going to see those more sophisticated operators, some of those ones that are quicker to adapt and evolve, probably begin to grow their portfolio through means of acquisition of the smaller guys. The challenge there, of course, is just what happens with interest rates, what happens with the broader economic climate. Does that consolidation happen more quickly over the next 2 to 3 years, or is that more of a 5, 7, 10 year runway as some of the economic unknowns continue to settle out?
Yeah, it's interesting in hearing on your comments, because you think about the barrier of entry that you talked about in some of these student markets, and then you consider the rise in interest rates, the banking situation, and it would seem to outside looking in that the new supply might be really limited and really help performance of these existing assets. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think it is fair to say, and truthfully, it's probably a good thing for a lot of campuses that got out over their skis with construction from 2015 to, say, through 2020. I'll point to the University of Mississippi, for example. Construction just got way out over its skis, and there for a few years, occupancy was below 80% at the market level in Oxford. So, you were looking at some really challenging properties. The University of Missouri was a good example where construction just got way too aggressive over way too short of a period. So that's one of those things that's interesting with student is you can have 2 or 3 years of significant underperformance if too much construction delivers. But I think you're going to see, outside of very select schools, construction levels are a little bit more manageable for the coming few years. The exceptions being University of Florida, University of Texas at Austin, Indiana University. Those three campuses have thousands of beds scheduled to deliver for the next few years. And it's not to say those campuses will underperform, because they may still be strong, but that's where that differentiation in student is so much more significant and so much more pronounced than what you see in the conventional marketplace.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. So Carl, what would you leave our audience with to think about for student housing?
Yeah. Kind of like we've said with conventional over the past year, be weary of using 2022 and 2023 in this case as a benchmark. That late recovery nature of student housing, it feels like a long time ago that we were talking about 1.5 to 3, maybe 4% rent growth is the norm. I think eventually that's going to return. So don't necessarily underwrite expectations through 2025 and 2026 at today's level of performance. But, the industry is probably in better shape than we've seen in some time. The other final thought that I would leave everyone with is just that there's a big difference when it comes to campus level dynamics. So be sure to do your due diligence and look at individual campus readings. You could even look at a state where the statewide demographics look favorable and have vastly different performance from a school that's, 20 miles away from its competing campuses. The University of Mississippi and Mississippi State, for example, don't necessarily march in tandem. And, I think that's just that differentiation between campus type that you're really going to see pronounced through 2023. So definitely do your due diligence whenever it comes to those campus level dynamics.
Yeah, well, that's a good point and good information, Carl. Thank you for joining us, sir. Good to see you.
Yeah, likewise. Always a pleasure.
All right. If you'd like more from Carl Whitaker with RealPage, check them out. Their website's realpage.com. And hey, let us know what you think. Please share the show with your friends and your connections. Please connect with us on your favorite social media. Hey, and if you will, subscribe to the show so you don't miss a special show of interest to you. And until next week, be sure that you always lead, learn, and laugh, and join us for America's Commercial Real Estate Show.
Appreciate the show? Consider referring business or doing business with our sponsors. Bull Realty is a commercial real estate sales, leasing, and advisory firm doing business throughout the Southeast, headquartered in Atlanta. Visit bullrealty.com for more information. Commercial Agent Success Strategies provides video training for commercial agents. This training gets 5-star reviews from even the most experienced brokers. Learn more at commercialagentsuccess.com. You're invited to connect with us on your favorite social media. You can find us on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. Don't miss a show of special interest to you. Be sure and subscribe to the show on YouTube and Apple Podcasts. And at the show website, creshow.com, you can subscribe for a weekly email announcing the show topic and guest. While you're there, you also found more videos and podcasts. Thank you for watching or listening to America's Commercial Real Estate Show.